Morning, everybody. I'd like to go ahead and call the Senate Finance Committee to order January 29th, 2021. With me today is co-chair Senator Bishop, Senator Von Imhoff, Senator Olson will be calling in, Senator Wilikowski. Senator Wilson is detained in another meeting. He won't be here. And Senator Hoffman is being tested, going through the process, I guess, to get in the building. And he will be joining the meeting as soon as he can. And today, we're going to start our budget overview. We have invited Neil Steininger, the Director of Office of Management and Budget, if he can come forward, representing the administration. And he's going to walk through the operating budget as proposed by the administration. And just for everybody watching at home, the governor is required to submit a budget by December 15th of every year for consideration, review, alteration, and execution. I mean throughput, not execution like termination of the legislature. So we'll take a look at the governor's administration's proposed budget. On Monday, we'll have legislative finance before the Finance Committee. Some of the issues that we see today will be restated or removed for various reasons. And we'll go over all those on Monday, and then we'll start our discussion here through the subcommittee process and at the table as we work through a mutually agreed upon expenditure plan for the state over the next fiscal year. So with that, Mr. Director, I know you have numerous people online, and rather than go through the litany of lists, if you need a lifeline, just signal the chairman. We'll allow you to have as many lifelines as you need, depending on the detail. I feel there's probably very little that you're going to be able to not answer offhand. I see you have one of your most trusted aides behind you to salvage you, and just in case. So if you can introduce yourself for the record, who you represent, and take us through the presentation. We will stop at the end of every slide or pause at the end of every slide for questions from committee members. And we have an hour and a half this morning. Go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning. And for the record, Neil Steininger, Director, Office of Management and Budget. Like Chairman Simmons said, I have several people on the line from different departments. Not every commissioner was able to be available this morning during this meeting. But if there is a subject matter that you have questions in depth on, we will work to ensure that commissioner and subject matter experts are available for you to discuss and go into detail on those issues at another committee meeting or during the subcommittee process. So I'd like to start out by talking a little bit about how we have gone into the fiscal situation that we're in now and sort of what's happened over the last decade. I know this isn't new to anyone here at the table or in this committee, but it is something that kind of bears repeating to understand really the picture of where the state's at right now. So leading up to fiscal year 13, the state was experiencing budget surpluses. Revenues were exceeding expenditures, and expenditures were rising along with those revenues, but a lot of that excess revenue was deposited into state savings accounts through both the statutory budget reserve and the constitutional budget reserve. Those savings accounts are represented here in the dark blue bars. You can see in fiscal year 13, they hit their peak value of a little over $16 billion. But also in fiscal year 13, we hit that inflection point where revenues started dropping due to a decline in production and subsequently a decline in oil price. But expenditures didn't decline in turn at that same rate. So we started to enter into a situation with deficit spending. In fiscal year 22, the budget we're proposing and discussing now, we're into our 10th budget with fiscal deficits, where expenditures exceed revenues. You can see that over that intervening time period, those savings accounts have been drawn down from that peak of $16 billion to a projected balance of less than $1 billion going into fiscal year 22. that balance really has let us weather the storm and put off some of the more difficult decisions surrounding the state's fiscal situation until now. However, you know, that ability to continue to utilize and lean on savings to avoid some of these discussions doesn't, you know, we don't have that ability anymore. And I guess when I say avoid discussions, I don't mean the discussions weren't happening, just that we weren't, you know, implementing necessarily all the changes necessary to really close that gap completely. But when you look at this chart, you can see that dotted yellow line over the solid yellow line. The solid yellow line is traditional revenues, the oil revenue and other taxes that the state collects. The dotted line represents both oil revenue, traditional revenue, and draws on the permanent fund through a percent of market value mechanism that was instituted in fiscal year 19. You can see that dotted yellow line now is very close to that solid red line, which is, you know, the traditional state expenditures. And the dotted red line is the traditional state expenditures plus the permanent fund dividend program. Even without the permanent fund dividend program, though, those revenues aren't sufficient to meet state obligations. So pause here for questions.
Senator Von Imhoff.
So thank you. Yeah, Mr. Steininger, I'm glad that you pointed out the solid red line and the dotted yellow line. So basically from 2019 till the 2022 estimate, they are nearly equal. I mean, they're not completely overlaid on one another, but they're nearly equal. So it is a relatively balanced budget with the revenues that we have now with the ERA draw, which is what it was designed for, as well as the current operating and capital budgets. So, I mean, this is good news, and it's a good place to start.
And just for clarity, the calculated dividend this year, what formula was used?
Chair Stedman, we use the current statutory formula. It's a draw of a little over $2 billion, which would be around a $3,000 dividend per person.
And does this reflect any ad hoc or overdraws of the 5% spending cap on the permanent fund?
Chair Stedman, yes, it does. So in order to, because there is not sufficient money in the Constitutional Budget Reserve to meet all of those obligations, we've proposed a one-time additional draw from the permanent fund earnings reserve in order to cover that dividend payment.
And what is that amount that's reflected here in your chart that's overdraw above 5% roughly?
Chair Stedman, it's roughly $2 billion, and it really is reflected by that difference between the solid red line and the dotted red line.
Okay. And that just for the folks watching, we have conflicting statutes. One statute lays out how the dividend calculation has been in the books for roughly 40 years, a little less than that. And then we have another statute that's been on the books for several years that caps the draw on the permanent fund earnings reserve. So we have conflicting statutes. So to create this, one of those two statutes would have to be breached. Do you agree with that statement, Mr. OMB Director?
Chair Stedman, yes, I would agree. We have two conflicting statutes, and we don't have other reserves that allow us to sort of, you know, work through those conflicting statutes by drawing on other reserves. So at this stage, that's where that.
Senator Von Imhoff.
How do you go about choosing which statutes you want to follow and which ones you want to disregard?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff. Yeah, I think that would be more a question for the governor, but the position on the permanent fund dividend is to follow that statute until that statute gets changed, which is why we've proposed a statutory change as well as a constitutional amendment, you know, related to solving this debate around the value of the dividend, which, as you noted earlier, when you look at the last several years, really is that difference between available revenues and, you know, total spending in the dotted red line. You know, that question of the amount of the dividend and how to follow that statute has sort of dominated that fiscal discussion. And so that's why we've proposed a solution to that discussion by amending the current statute.
Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. You said this year there'd be a one-time overdraw on the earnings reserve over the 5%. What's the deficit projected to be for next year?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, on the OMB 10-year plan, we have a slide depicting the first 5 years of that. You can see if all of the fiscal pieces that we've proposed this year are implemented, there's still a $1.2 billion issue that needs to be resolved. The scope of the fiscal problem that we face as a state right now is not something that can be solved simply or easily with a single proposal. We're looking to address that biggest discussion point, biggest issue of the dividend payment and how we resolve the conflict between those two statutes. That's really what we're focused on in the packages that we've put forward today and setting some other frameworks around, how the state's fiscal system works and looks into the future. But we do definitely acknowledge that doesn't solve 100% of the problem. It just solves a very large piece of the problem that's dominated the discussions over the last several years.
And for those watching, we're going to have future presentations here starting next week with the permanent fund, and we'll be talking about the stability and management of the permanent fund and their financial targets that their consultants are recommending they use for rates of return over the next several years. And that will be wrapped up into these discussions as we move forward and we build pieces and taking a look at also this 10-year plan that was mentioned by the OMB director. But the committee will also start narrowing that focus down in years, looking out for the next two or three. You got to survive the next two or three before you can get to year 10. So we're going to work on all that, Senator Wilikowski. And then we'll be trying to bring some conclusions together with that dispersed information back to the committee later in the session as we try to formulate a conclusion. We have other questions on this chart, Senator Bishop, did you have anything?
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't. I mean, I could say a lot, but I won't. We have 30 slides to get through in an hour and a half, and we'll have plenty of time to have deeper conversations.
Okay, go on to slide two.
So this slide is just to quickly kind of put into context, primarily this presentation is about the state's operating budget and the details within it. But I wanted to put into context those operating budget decisions with the other pieces of the fiscal package that we've proposed this year. So there's operating budget reductions and trying to have a constrained operating budget and continue that downward pressure on state spending. But we also have a couple of items acknowledging that the state's economic situation is a little bit different this year. The sort of traditional spending in capital budgets in last year weren't appropriate just as a result of the pandemic. So we have a fast-track supplemental budget that both ensures that projects, traditional projects like the Pittman-Robertson and Dingell-Johnson projects within Fish and Game are appropriated for this last year. That's in our fast-track supplemental budget, as well as a couple other items that were kind of left on the table at the end of last year, ensuring funding for elections. But we'll have time to discuss supplementals in more depth later, but also the completion of last year's permanent fund dividend is within that fast-track supplemental budget, which is part of looking at the needs of the state during this pandemic and the loss of income to individuals. We also have kind of a slightly different than traditional capital budget, traditional in the sense of the projects that are there, but a little bit untraditional in the way that we financed it, which also leads to the overall fiscal picture of the state. The unavailability of general fund revenues has made us try to think what are areas or things that we can do that they may be short term or one time, but create that relief that allow us another year to implement some of these hard decisions and have those discussions. One of those things is the use of Alaska Housing Finance Corporation bonding within the capital budget. We also will be proposing a roughly $350 million general obligation bond package. And really that is an acknowledgement of sort of lean capital budgets over the last several years and wanting to both get shovel-ready projects out that, you know, will get people to work now, but also set an expectation into the future of availability of capital spending from the state so that those companies can make hiring decisions for the long term. Also within this overall package, we have a suite of constitutional amendments that are related to really how the state lays out, you know, its fiscal, you know, fiscal issues and how we approach those. One of them being constitutionalizing the percent of market value draw and really, you know, managing the permanent fund the way that it's now used and ensuring that overdraws can't happen into the future. Also a constitutional amendment related to an appropriations limit that would limit state spending and try to ensure that we don't have, you know, increases in spending like we saw, you know, a decade ago. And then the final constitutional amendment is, well, one related to taxation and ensuring that there's, you know, discussion with the people if new taxes are issued. So that's the context of the overall fiscal package that this operating budget fits into.
And for those that are watching at home, what's a fast track supplemental? Is something you're going to put on the Alaska Railroad and drive around up north or what?
Thank you, Senator Stedman. Fast track supplemental is simply a supplemental budget that we've introduced earlier than the normal statutory deadline. The statutory deadline for introduction of supplemental items is this coming week, but we introduced this when we introduced our governor's budget because in December, because they were all items that have a much more urgent nature than normal supplemental items. So kind of when you look at supplemental needs, which are needs in the current fiscal year that we're currently operating in, you know, some of them have different levels of urgency. And really these are ones that have more urgency or are to sort of solve some items that weren't appropriated during the last legislative session because the legislature had to adjourn due to the pandemic.
So we'll be taking up the supplemental budget in the future also that, as reference, a supplemental budget is think of it as a repair budget or an alteration budget for the current fiscal year. Some of those items need a quicker effective date, so that piece of legislation, if it goes anywhere, would come early or in the session, and other supplemental items that aren't time sensitive normally get rolled up into the end of the budget process with the rest of the bills, just for those watching at home. So we will be taking the supplemental budget request up as a separate item here later on in the next week and two. So we have questions, I think, from all members, and we'll start with Senator Bishop, and we'll go to right around the table to Senator Von Imhoff, Senator Hoffman, and then Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Steiniger, when will the administration be able to tell us what the cost of these bonds are going to be from AHFC?
And through the chair, Senator Bishop, the sort of numeric that's being used right now based on the current market conditions and current interest rates is about $64,000 per $1 million issued. So the $101 million AHFC bond package, roughly $6.4 million in financing costs.
Thank you.
And just as an add into that, we're going to be having a review of the state's debt position and debt schedule and all that stuff coming up later on when we get into that discussion, so the public will get a full view of the debt position of the state and potential position if it's altered by any additional debt incurred. Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you, Chair Stedman. Commissioner Steiniger, I am going to ask again about the bonds to dovetail here on Senator Bishop's question. I don't see any other slides in here in particular that talks about the bonds. So if we're going to have $350 million general obligation bond package, which there's definitely some merit for that for kickstarting the economy, and I understand the rationale behind it, but how are we going to pay back those bonds when all of our cash under the governor's proposal is being given away as a dividend? Generally, when you have a revenue bond, you generate revenue and you use that revenue to pay the interest on the bond. And, you know, what I don't understand is if we are going to make revenue on this and we just give it away, how are the markets going to position this? How are they going to price it? I think they're going to price it so high that the cost may be too high to even pay back the bond. So it's hard to try to support a general revenue obligation bond when the revenue, there's no revenue there to pay it back. So what are your thoughts on that?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, I think I would defer a lot of the questions about the, you know, the bond rating to the state's debt manager. However, you know, in terms of how do we pay the debt, you know, that's definitely within my wheelhouse. The state has, you know, debt service for prior bonds, some of which are expiring and being paid off in some coming years. So we know some of our existing debt, you know, debt payments will be coming off the table and tapering down in the near future. So that creates some capacity to pay for the debt. You know, it doesn't fully cover the total cost of debt on $350 million. However, you know, it is that trade-off in that decision-making of, you know, the money now during a time when the state needs this money on the street and the low cost of financing, you know, versus, you know, paying interest on that over time is definitely a decision that has to be weighed in this, and we think it's a decision that's worthwhile based on the situation the state faces. You know, going forward, you know, this debt would be, you know, part of our general fund obligation going forward, which is something that has to be considered in future budget discussions. You know, it's how we manage that and how we pay for it. But those decisions would have to happen in the light of, you know, circumstances during those years as we develop those budgets.
I think the point that's trying to be made is when you run a deficit, a structural deficit, you still end up with a structural deficit. It's not, there's not a positive cash flow coming in. So we'll be looking at if these other mechanisms is going to turn that structural deficit around, and then there's a positive cash flow to pay the additional debt service. Otherwise, you're just digging a deeper hole. So we'll take a look at that in more detail when we have the bond manager, our debt manager up, and the Commissioner of Revenue along with OMB. And we'll have those discussions. We're going to spend a lot of time looking at the net cash position of the state. That is, we have a cash flow problem that we need to deal with. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Director, a couple of questions on the PFD. First of all, the early payment to backfill the full payment of the PFD this year. Is that... what is the amount of that, and how many billions of dollars will that cost?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, it's roughly $1,900 per person, which is about $1.2 billion that would be drawn from the earnings reserve.
From the earnings reserve. And the second question that I have is on your last bullet point regarding constitutional amendments. You say that you're going to come up with a statutory change and then a complement of a constitutional amendment. Although it hasn't been laid out, does the administration contemplate putting a formula in the constitutional amendment, or what are the parameters of that constitutional amendment?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, the constitutional amendment for the PFD is part of the constitutional amendment that covers the percent of market value draw and the framework of that amendment. It doesn't put the specific formula into the Constitution, but it calls for there to be a PFD payment as prescribed by law. And so that's that statutory PFD formula change, you know, complements that language in the constitutional amendment, and that statutory change to the PFD formula would be 50% of the percent of market value draw.
And the final question, will the the permanent fund dividend for 2022 be the amount that's calculated by the proposed statutory change?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, what we proposed in the budget is to follow the current statute. The statutory change in the PFD, whether that would be in effect then or not, would be based on the, you know, the effective date of that bill and how that moves is through committee or if it's amended during the committee process. But what the statute is at the time the dividend is paid, you know, our position is it should be paid based on the statute as it's written at the time it's paid.
So for the watching audience, how much would it be under the current formula? How much would the PFD be, and how much would the PFD be under your formula change?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, under the current formula, it's approximately $3,000. Under the formula change, I don't have that number off the top of my head. I think it might actually be on one of my later slides, though. So
you can get back to us.
I'll get back to you with that number.
So the question that I have is, given those two scenarios, could you provide me or the committee with how much the total draw would be in billions for the full dividend and for the change in the formula, which I believe will be several billion dollars? Do you have those numbers now, or do you have to provide them at a later date?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, we'll provide those at a later date and try to put together that in a table that can compare those numbers for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Just for clarification, the position of OMB on the appropriation required is the funds coming out of the permanent fund, the 5%. Is that the standard general fund appropriation process, or does the administration view it as some other process?
Chair Stedman, I believe I understand the question. Are you asking, do we consider that percent of market value draw, the 5% that's laid out in statute now, as just unrestricted general fund revenue? Was that the question? Yes.
Yes.
Yes. And
go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, and that's how we reflect it on the OMB fiscal summary, very similar to the way that's reflected by Ledge Finance as a component of revenue.
So just for everybody's clear at the table, so that OMB is in agreement with the Alaska Supreme Court on their ruling of the classification of that as regular general funds available for appropriation like anything else?
Correct.
Okay, good. Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your first item on that top of that page there is operating budget reductions, and the budget is, I guess, about $4 or $4.5 billion. What's the UGF number that the administration would like to achieve?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, are you asking, you know, what's our target UGF budget?
Yes.
Over time?
Yes.
So in our 10-year plan, you know, we illustrate just continued operating budget reductions over the next 2 years of about another $150 million on top of the $295 million that we put forward today. You know, that's a goal we set for ourselves. It's not necessarily specifics. You know, those are things that have to be investigated on an annual basis as sort of, you know, facts on the channel. Facts on the ground and changes in state operations happen. You know, that's every year we look at that, but we always, you know, we need to set ourselves goals for what we're trying to work towards. So just continued reductions and that continued downward pressure on state spending is important.
And my question, I think there was a reference in one of your documents, maybe it's your 10-year plan, that to $1 billion in additional revenue. And just curious, does the governor support additional revenue? And if so, from what source would he like to see that?
So I think on some of the stuff, we're getting ahead of him. We're going to talk about the 10-year plan and the holes. some of these questions you may want to defer till later on in your presentation. That is one of the questions that we'll come back to fill that hole. We may even have a whole hearing on the 10-year plan, if need be. So the, depending on interest of the committee members. To the earlier question that Senator Wilikowski was asking, you know, where do you want to land? I think what we're going to be asking you to do is to tell us the dollar amount you want to be at in 3 years, because there is some confusion over one-time items use and the other reductions you want. So if we can clearly delineate what the ending point is, if it's 3 years out, then we can work backwards and look at the reductions. Otherwise, we will get a little it'll get a little confusing on the magnitude. And we're going to unwind some of this stuff on Monday. We're going to take out some of the one-year sources and actually look at how deep the hole is. And it's a little deeper than what is going to be presented today. So that's kind of coming attractions. But Senator Wilikowski, if you could wait on the 10-year plan questions, because those are some major questions. Go ahead and continue.
So my next slide, and I believe for committee members, there's a slip sheet that has a correction on this slide that you received. So this is giving the high-level picture of the state's operating budget, both FY21, the year that we're currently operating under, as well as our proposal for FY22. And you can see the top half is reflecting revenues that are available for appropriation. The significant changes there really is a small reduction in that traditional revenue, that first row labeled unrestricted revenue, a small reduction in traditional revenue. This also reflects revenue impacts as a result of the pandemic. This is a significantly lower number than was projected prior to the pandemic. It also reflects the draw from the earnings reserve. You can see that in fiscal year 21, the way that we show it is showing the total statutory draw, but also the amount used for dividends and leaving the amount available for government. In fiscal year 22, the entirety of the POMV earnings reserve draw for government is being used for government. Another thing to note on the revenue portion in the top half, under carried forward and adjustments, that number in the total column is significantly larger than you would see in a normal year, and that's reflecting carry forward of federal receipts from coronavirus aid that was received. And so that's what that spike is in the $1.1 billion in carry forward. And that's also reflected in the expenditure side down below. So on the expenditure side, you can see a comparison at the high level categories of state spending. Total operating is down about $205 million. Most of that coming from agency operations. And as Chair Stedman alluded to, a lot of that is, you know, some one-time reductions. We have areas where we have, you know, kind of areas where we have an opportunity this year to save some money and to ensure that some money is continued to be held in the CBR so that we can lessen that draw in fiscal year 22, but may not be things that can be, you know, executed in the long term. There's also statewide operations are roughly flat year over year. The capital budget, while on this slide appears to be a $54 million reduction, that's where that $101 million in AHFC bonding is, so it isn't accounted for as unrestricted general fund spending. However, there is that capital spending. So if you accounted for that, our capital budget would be a little bit higher than last year. So total appropriations, that's a comparison before supplementals and before RPLs, just to kind of give a fair comparison of what the state budgeted at the start of fiscal year 21 versus what we're proposing for fiscal year 22. That's where that $295 million reduction comes from. At the bottom line, we have a deficit of roughly $40 million remaining after all the, you know, operating budget reductions and one-time uses of fund sources. And so that draw would come from the constitutional budget reserve.
Okay, so the issue that was spoken about just a minute ago, the one-time sources can be, uses can be picked up under total appropriations, or you can go up to agency appropriations from $4 billion to $3.8 billion. And I think, you know, when we add those adjustments back in of one-time uses, we're going to be closer to four. And we're going to take a look at the last 3 or 4 years, 4 or 5 years in hindsight on the agencies and extrapolate that out to the next 2 or 3 years and try to be very careful about one-time uses so we can actually get a good, clear picture of the structural problem that's in the middle of the table. And if we decide to use one-time funding for certain items, we want it real clear to all committee members what those are and their one-time. So we're going to work on defining with OMB where they want to land and without the one-time uses, and then we're going to back into it. So we'll have those conversations over the next few weeks and put it in a format that the public can follow as reasonably as best we can. Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you, Chair Steadman. Yeah, Mr. Steininger, I think what's really difficult, the fiscal year 21, the one that we're in right now, is being, the waters are being muddied, if you will, with CARES Act money coming in. And it, there's so many ways that the CARES Act money can be used to spend, to pay for things. We just want to make sure that we do one-time money, revenue, CARES Act, is properly matched with one-time expenses, maybe education, you know, or just things like PPP, protective equipment, maybe iPads for kids, whatever it may be. I don't know. I'm hoping that your office is looking at that, and then maybe we might even have to have a third column, you know, UGF, one time, and then total spending, something along that line. It's just a thought. So those are things that, thank you, Chair Steadman, that you are thinking about, and I think that we should, because we don't want to muddy the waters here, especially as we're going forward in 2022, when hopefully starting in July 1st, COVID is winding down, we're not receiving as much CARES Act money because it's not necessary, things of that nature. So we need to sort of come up with more of a traditional budget starting in 2022 is the hope of the theory. But I would like to point out, Chair Steadman here and Mr. Steininger, that under fiscal year 2022, UGF, without paying a dividend, before paying a dividend, we have about a $39 million deficit. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, that's correct, yes.
So, follow up? So that appears to be, you know, fairly close to a balanced budget at this point. And then with if we follow the proposal of the governor, a statutory dividend, it's a $2 billion draw. And that basically, as soon as we put a line item there for the dividend, that's about a $2 billion deficit. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, that's correct.
Okay. So, and I stated it last year, and I'm going to state it again this year. We don't necessarily have a fiscal crisis. We have a priority crisis. Because right here, right now, before paying a dividend, we have about a $39 million deficit. Price of oil is going up. Price of oil is going down. I mean, that's, we'll have to see how things land. And the last reminder is that there is federal money coming in. The most recent round was December 21st, and I believe it was a $600 distribution to families and people for CARES Act funding in the form of, in essence, a federal dividend. So there are dividends being paid periodically throughout the year from the federal government in the CARES Act funding. And just to quote my other co-chair, Senator Bishop, it's important to preserve state cash when possible because we don't know what the future is going to hold. Thank you.
Also, I think there might be even an additional federal dividend coming directly to folks, depending on what goes on in Washington in the next month or so. So we're going to take all that into account in our decision process. Any other questions on this slide? We'll speed along to slide number five.
Slide number five is looking at the impact of these decisions on our state savings accounts. So on the right-hand side, you have the constitutional budget reserve, the saving account that was represented in those blue bars on the first slide. You can see the impact of last year's deficit draw or this current fiscal year's deficit draw of $860 million, resulting in an imbalance of $930. Next year, that draw on the CBR is significantly lower at about $40 million. And you can see that brings us down to $916.8 million in CBR. Now, there's no necessarily magic number in terms of what that CBR balance needs to be. But when we start to dip below about $500 million, it starts to create trouble for cash flow and management of cash, which I understand the committee will probably want to hear more discussion later on that concept. But that's just kind of the numeric that I use in terms of, you know, where that balance starts to get dangerous. But at $900 million roughly, you know, we're starting to get into that territory where we're getting near that amount that's just needed for basic management of state finances on a day-to-day basis. On the left-hand side, you have the permanent funds earning reserve. This is where you can see the impact of the proposed draws to pay out the statutory permanent fund dividend. You know, this is a one-time event, you know, a one-time thing. We're not proposing that going forward into the future we should continue to utilize the earnings reserve to pay, you know, dividends over and above the percent of market value draw. That's why there's that importance of that constitutional amendment that's part of the fiscal package to limit this in the future. But this is acknowledging that we're not in normal times this year, and so kind of a proposal like this is necessary to meet our needs.
I think this is fairly similar to a couple of years ago before the COVID-19, the draw issue on the permanent fund. So it just gets repackaged. We have any other questions on this? We will be looking at the CBR balances. We'll go into why the CBR balances has escalated relative to what was expected last time we were here several months ago. And we'll take a look at that. And then we'll also have those discussions with the permanent fund group on the earnings reserve and the corpus and inflation proofing and all those discussions. Also the impact of an ad hoc draw or an overdraw over the 5% and the impact that it would have on their management structure and how they manage the funds and what they feel is a comfortable level of the earnings reserve. So we're going to have those conversations also starting next week. We have other questions on this slide. Mr. Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to make a statement regarding the draw from the CBR, particularly probably in the other body, but the high level of three-quarter vote to access the CBR causes substantial problems. And I don't know if the $39 or the $40 million that is proposed here warrants the even the consideration of using the CBR in FY22. So that could cause a myriad of problems, and I would advise that even if that went north to $100 million, it may not be worth the effort of the committee to consider using the CBR this year.
And for those watching at home, last year there was a request to from different groups in the building to in the legislature to attain their support for CBR draw went from $35 million on up to about $140 million. So the point that Senator Hoffman is making, we would be basically held for ransom for the $39 million in simple language, street language. So we'll be considering that in our structure, because the goal is to minimize the expenditures in the operating account, not add to them. So we'll be taking a good look at that, Senator Hoffman, on how to put a budget together that can move more aggressively to fix the structural deficit.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Mr. Steiner, you can continue.
So this slide is, as I mentioned earlier, it's a five-year portion of our 10-year plan. I'm just looking at the most, you know, the nearest term period as reflected in that plan. And this puts together, you know, all of those different elements of the fiscal package that I've discussed. It reflects the impact of if the statutory change to the permanent fund dividend is implemented, and it reflects the impact of budget changes that we have proposed this year. You know, one thing to note in those, you know, forward projections is they're just, you know, they're kind of it's your best guess of what will happen. We're using escalators on some items. You know, it's forward predictions start to get murky the further you go out. But here's where you can see that while we're proposing a fix to one piece of the plan and we're proposing a framework for how we address these issues going forward, it doesn't solve the full problem. The problem that the state faces is fairly significant and can't be solved with just one tool. And so we need to be looking at many different areas. So you can see that on that surplus deficit row there, as we move to implement all of these different items, it still leaves a pretty significant deficit that we'll have to, you know, be having conversations about how we solve that, you know, so that we can plan for that forward. But, you know, today we're really here to talk mostly about that $294 million number and our changes to agency operations. But, you know, going forward, we still need to be pushing down on agency operations and finding areas where we can save money and address a lot of the cost drivers that the state faces. Because, you know, as we move into fiscal year 23, after we've resolved fiscal year 22, we'll still have other cost increases that we'll have to work against in order to see more budget reductions. It's a constant process to work through, you know, natural cost increases to commodities, to, you know, personnel, to labor, to different formula drivers in the state that we have to work against every year as we're trying to find ways to reduce state operating budgets. But this just gives you a little bit of a picture of, you know, the future if things all get implemented as they've been proposed today.
Okay, we've got a couple of questions, but first I need a clarification. FY23, it's showing substantially less than a 5% draw to the permanent fund. Why is it reflected in that? Why isn't all the revenue up on the revenue line?
Chair Stemmons, thank you for asking for that clarification. Something I should have noted is this is reflecting the proposal to split the POMV draw 50% to government, 50% to dividends. So the addition of that line down towards the bottom of permanent fund POMV for PFD, adding that to the permanent fund POMV GF draw up at the top, the structure as we're proposing it as part of that constitutional amendment would split where that draw goes based on the statutory change that we've also proposed. So that's why you see half of the draw up in the revenue line and half of the draw down in the sort of revenue for permanent fund dividends line.
Okay, and then if you could restate this chart for the committee and get back to me under the current plan, the current statutes that we have in place, because this assumes a lot of changes going forward that may or may not take place. So that would be helpful. Senator Wilikowski, then Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So in FY next year, $1.2 billion deficit going forward, almost $1 billion deficit every year. It takes time to implement any new revenue measures. When do you think is the appropriate time to start discussing how we're going to deal with that $1 billion-a-year deficit? Do you think we can wait till next year, or do you think we should do it this year? And if so, what are the proposals the governor has?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, you know, the time to have discussions is definitely now. We're open to discussions. The proposals that we've put forward, though, are to address what we see as, you know, the biggest issue that's dominating most of the conversation, and resolving the issue of the permanent fund dividend Because that appropriation and the movement in that appropriation over the last several years, you know, resolving that will allow us then to be able to focus on those other bigger discussions about the way we address cost drivers in the spending side, as well as, you know, are there, you know, options for, you know, how we address the revenue side and other things. You know, the governor last night in the State of the State mentioned, you know, introducing gambling as a potential thing to bring revenue into the state. So, you know, the discussion about revenue, where it comes from, is a discussion that we're open to have, but the proposals that we've put forward now are really trying to focus on some of those bigger issues to finish those issues so that we can focus on those bigger discussions as well.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To follow on the comments of Senator Wilikowski, I have the same concerns. It seems as though both of them issues are of paramount to the state, resolving the dividend and looking at additional revenue sources. I don't believe that we need to just look at just one of those issues. We need to look at both of them this year. We should be able to walk and chew gum at the same time. That doesn't seem to be a big ask. And since the administration is in charge of submitting a budget, it would seem to me that they would submit revenue proposals along with this, because there are probably people in this building, legislators, that may want to be assured that we have a balanced budget before we decide upon a POMB split, and make, which is two major decisions to change the way that the POMB is working, and put all of the funds into one fund, and then to decide on what that split is going to be, which is going to be another major battle. So to ignore the revenue sources and to say we're going to put all of the battle on the major two major changes that the administration has put on the table, I think is a little bit short-sighted. As I said, I believe we should be working with the third floor to come up with revenue measures this year, because as Senator Wilikowski said, it's going to take time to have those implemented. And I would hope that the administration can walk and chew gum at the same time.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Steininger, what is the administration using for their inflation factor going in the out years?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, I believe it's 2.25% in the years after fiscal year 25.
Thank you.
Mr. Steininger, could you help me and restate this chart or this table to accurately reflect current statutes going forward, so we can see a comparison from OMB's perspective? This is, again, with a lot of statutory changes and other political decisions that may or may not happen. Okay, we'll go on to slide 7.
So slide 7 is looking at an overview of the Save Alaska operating budget. So state agencies that deliver services, other statewide items like debt or payments into retirement systems, you know, what is kind of classically the operating budget. You can see in the top right a comparison from FY19 to 22, about an 8.3% reduction in unrestricted general fund spending, and about an 8.8% reduction in designated general fund spending as well. At the bottom line, when you factor in increases in federal revenues, you get about a 3.6% reduction in the overall budget. Similarly, a reduction in position count of about 148 full-time positions and 96 part-time positions. A little bit of an increase in the amount of non-permanent positions that the state has on budget, but a net reduction of 208 positions total. So as we worked on the fiscal year 22 operating budget, and as we worked with departments on this operating budget, there were, you know, kind of a handful of factors that we were really, you know, under in the situation that we were developing this. We were developing the budget during the summer. You know, really on everybody's mind was the pandemic and how we're responding to it. So that really influenced the decisions that we had and the way that agencies looked at their spending. So when we asked agencies to put together their budget proposals to us at the Office of Management and Budget, you know, we asked them to look at those areas where, you know, they kind of learned about their operations as they responded to the pandemic. As employees went home to telework, you know, how did you change your operations? Are there things that you learned that you can change that can implement cost savings into the future? You know, a lot of those things are very small changes. When you walk through these agency operating budgets during the committee process and you talk to the agencies, you'll see a lot of very small changes, but, you know, it's those small changes that add up to larger dollars. You know, those sorts of activities, that sort of, you know, introspection and investigation into how we operate the state is really the necessary work that needs to be done just to continue downward pressure, because we do have a lot of larger costs that rise that we're having to always find room to accommodate it within our budget. So the highlights that you'll see here, you know, a lot of organizational changes for service delivery, a lot of process changes for telework, resulting in savings, even in areas where telework may not continue. They find efficiencies that can be implemented even when people come back into the office. You know, just continue constrained operational costs. And also, you know, as I mentioned earlier, a lot of areas where, you know, we have the ability to utilize one-time funding to save some general fund and ensure we have a lesser draw on the CBR, so that money is there, you know, when these opportunities go away, that we have the money still in the savings account to continue to, you know, have the resources we need in order to work through some of these larger issues. Some of those things are, you know, federal relief effort that was actually directed specifically to, you know, supporting operational costs in the state. I think a lot of, you know, the discussion around COVID relief really is on the what's called the COVID Relief Fund, the CRF, the $1.25 billion that came into the state. But that's just one piece of all the COVID reliefs that came in. There's a lot of specific items that came into agencies like DOT, or we'll discuss later in Health and Social Services, that support ongoing costs that the state faces in the operating budget, that in this year and in next year, we can offset some general fund costs in the short term, but under the knowledge that, you know, that relief coming from the federal government can't be guaranteed forever, but we can take advantage of it now to save us money in the present. So that's kind of the context that we worked through this budget, that we worked with agencies on, and further slides will go, and we have detail on specific changes in each agency's operating budget.
Okay, we got a question here, but I'm going to ask you to redo the slide too, if you could help me a little bit on unrestricted general funds. Now, this is the agencies, correct?
Correct. Yes. So, Chair Stemmen, this reflects just the operating budget, the agencies, as well as what we call in the budget world statewide items, which is state debt, capitalization of funds, and payment assistance into the retirement system, into PERS.
So you've got the effect of the courts, the legislature, the administration. You've got debt service. You've got the statewide issues in unrestricted general funds here.
Chair Stebbins, that's correct. What is missing from this would be capital, the capital budget, and the permanent fund dividend payments.
Senator Von Imhoff, and then Senator Bishop.
Thank you. So I think that was sort of my point. This, just to confirm, this is expenditures, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so what I find interesting is that The permanent fund is sometimes included in the overall expenditures in your graphs, and sometimes it's not. It just seems inconsistent that sometimes it is and sometimes it's excluded. I think that when you look at overall spending, and you look at the last 8 years from the Parnell administration across the Walker administration, across the Dunleavy administration, when you start looking at total spending, and capital and the permanent fund are very material. When you start looking at total spending, it's up in the last couple of years, especially with proposals that the governor has put on the table with this payment of the back dividend and the statutory dividend for 2022. And I think it's very disingenuous when it's not included, because total spending matters. Total cash flow matters. And when your administration sits here at this table and doesn't include it in its documents, and if you look at it two pages hence, it's not included either, it shows a false sense of where we're at. So I would like this restated, showing capital and the permanent fund proposed by the governor at this time. Thank you.
So we can work on getting some of those items included, but also on the unrestricted general funds, because these numbers don't, I recollect different numbers, and so if we can get them broken down in the categories, your agencies, and then you've got your, make it clear that what's added back on the legislature, the governor's office, the courts, retirement, statewide, because I want to make sure we can reconcile the numbers back and forth so we take care of that early on, and we have a policy debate at the table. So if you can just help me with the clarifications of that, and I don't have my notes in front of me, but that would be cleaner. And then to the earlier question from Senator Von Imhoff, you can add in the permanent fund issue also, and you could, if you want, you can do two slides, one with it, one without it, whatever. But just so we get all the information on the table, because according to the Supreme Court, it's all general fund spending, and we follow the guidance of the courts. If we agree or not agree, that's not relevant. That's the law of the land. So with that, any other questions? So Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just real quick, I know we're running behind, but on the position counts, 19 through 22, the total rolled up to 208, am I safe in assuming that includes the bulk of the university cuts are in here as well? Because I went back, the university slide is 148, and if I do the math, the PCN counts for the state or for the other agencies totals 57.
You can get back to Senator on that, answer that question. If we get a detailed question, then that's no problem. We're probably going to run over today. I don't want to accelerate the process with the Office of Management and Budget. So whatever we don't get done today here, we'll pick up Monday morning, and then we'll have an at ease at the end of that meeting and go into the afternoon Monday, if it's all right with committee members. And we stay on schedule. So I think this is our important discussion as we work through these issues. And so go ahead and continue.
So as I mentioned on the prior slide, there are a lot of cost drivers that push the budget up that we have to account for before we can even start making budget reductions. So between fiscal year 19 and 22, there's about $150 million worth of increases that needed to be accounted for before we could find decreases in the budget. And actually, looking at this slide, I'd like to correct the first bullet. Actually, that is a typo. It's actually about $70 million in state assistance for retirement increasing. So that $150 million number is really closer to $170 million. The employee salary adjustments for cost of living and for health insurance have increased $50 million over this time period. Investments in public protection services, and while that's not necessarily just a natural cost driver, but there are, you know, pragmatic choices that have to be made to respond to things in our community. But those investments have added $52.8 million to the budget over this time period. So in order for us to even find operating budget reductions, we first have to sort of dig our way out of that hole. And so that's really just to illustrate, you know, the magnitude of the pressure that we all are facing as we're trying to make decisions to reduce the cost footprint of government spending. And so it's just to kind of further frame, you know, what agencies, what's the executive branch, and what really what you as legislature have to consider as we work through with agencies how to reduce spending and how we put together the budget that we put together to put in front of you today.
Senator Bishop.
On this cost driver page, I don't know, Mr. Chairman, if it's relevant, but I just got to say it. When you're looking at maybe proposing an overdraw of the magnitude that the administration is from the ERA, I think that should be a bullet on this slide too, of the lost revenue going forward for into perpetuity by overdrawing the ERA. I think it's you're breaking the prudent investor man rule.
So we'll have those calculations run, I think, Senator Bishop. Opportunity cost is what you're referring to. Mr. Steininger, do you have any comment on opportunity cost reflection, needed or not needed, in your opinion?
Yes, through the chair, Senator Bishop. And one thing I should have mentioned on my earlier slide showing the five-year outlook is that we did factor in that reduction in POMV income as a result of the draw on the earnings reserve. We very much acknowledge that does impact that five-year average balance. And that's something that is considered in, you know, that fairly weighty proposal that we put forward.
So I think we'll put a further refinement on it going forward and actually look at if we did an ad hoc overdraw, what would the financial loss be over a few decades of the permanent fund, because it goes on for perpetuity, and it will affect future dividends and other any other payment now. So we'll try to put a numeric on it as best we can, and I think the permanent fund could help us with that, maybe, or ledge finance. So go ahead and have any other questions on this slide? Okay, go ahead and continue.
And so this slide is my final slide of just giving context. Really, this is looking at those components of the traditional operating budget of, you know, agencies and statewide spending and how they weigh against each other. If you were to add the dividend on here, obviously it would be the next bar to the left. But each agency, you can see, indeed, primarily that is the payments out to K-12 foundation program to schools in all of our communities. DHSS, that's primarily the Medicaid program, and then a lot of other formula programs that impact the health of Alaskans. And you can see, you know, the next agency down is much smaller, and it tapers off in a tail there. But this just gives you a context of each of their agencies and sort of their size relative to one another.
So when you come back with us on your target where you want to be in 3 years, so we can add back to it rather than start today and go forward and get confused over one-time items and other things, set that dollar amount. If it's $300 million or $400 million reduction, I'd like to get an idea from the administration where on this chart you would like those budget reductions targeted so the committee can concentrate its discussion in that area. When I look at this chart, education is formula driven, it's very difficult. Retirement is very difficult. HESS takes statute changes. The university's already had a haircut. The Marine Highway's already been sunk, pretty much. You know, there's not a lot of maneuverability, so I think we need some help in targeting it. So if you can help us with that, and if they are static, and we've already had the reductions that are reasonably able to implement, then we just need to know it and conclude it and go on to other ways of solving the deficit and carry that message to the people. And we'll be looking, into the reasonableness of delivery of budgetary reductions. And if we can't get there, we got to go to another method. Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you, Chair Sedman. So, Mr. Steininger, you mentioned it in your discussion just now that the permanent fund, if it was on this chart, would be in the very first bar on the far left there at about $2 billion. And UGF, these are UGF budgets. We've already established that the permanent fund dividend is part of the UGF budget, so it should be on here. So hopefully on Monday, when we meet again on this, you can distribute the new graph with the permanent fund dividend included on it, the proposal, the statutory proposal that the administration wants to put down, wants to advocate for. So if you could restate this graph with the permanent fund so we can see its magnitude compared to all the other spending, I think that's important. And I just have to say, if your administration is going to propose a full dividend and the corresponding deficits that go with it, own it. Put it in all your slides. Defend it. Talk about it. Don't hide behind the fact that we're just going to pretend it doesn't exist because it's just this very large bar compared to everything else. Own it.
Okay, so we'll try to sell our deficit to someone else, but we're going to probably all own that collectively here at the table. So we'll work together, try to solve it. But we'll ask him to, if he could, add that. And then if we conclude, after we go through our budgetary process this year towards the end, that there's not a lot of margin left, we're going to have to look at other tools to solve that structural deficit because it cannot continue in perpetuity. You get it going broke. So. Senator Wilkowski.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a comment, but getting a little frustrated here with the constant theme that the only way we solve this is by taking people's dividends. And I need to correct the record. It's important for people to understand that we currently have a situation where we have a Texas company running Prudhoe Bay that is paying a zero corporate income tax. We have a negative overall corporate income tax. We're about to write checks for up to $300 million to corporations in the state of Alaska off their corporate income taxes. We're going to allow probably $500 million in tax credits to the oil industry this year alone. We've got an overall tax rate of 2.6% in the oil industry, probably the lowest in the world. So I don't want the public to get the misinformation, I don't want this to become implanted in the public's mind that the only way we solve this is by taking away their dividends. Because there are other ways, because every dollar that we don't get from the oil industry, which we're required, by the way, to get our maximum value for the resource, and we are not anywhere near that, when we don't get that, that means that money's coming out of people's dividends. And I've been doing this long enough, and everyone at this table's been doing this long enough to know we're staring down the barrel of no dividends going down in the future because we're afraid to get the fair share for our resource on the North Slope. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So we've got a multiple-pronged problem here we'll work through. Job security, I guess, for the committee the next couple months. But that gets onto the other expenditure issues we'll be looking at. A little bit yesterday the revenue source book and corporate income tax and some other things that the community is getting informed about. So we'll try to work through some of those issues also. But clearly it's a multi-pronged problem and not easily solved or would already been solved. So Mr. OMB Director, do you'd like to go on to slide number 10?
So from slide 10 on, we have details about each agency. So just for a little familiarity on this graph, Some of these graphs, Department of Administration is inclusive of what we call duplicated funds. So those are funds that are charged by an agency to other agencies. The reason that we've included them in the Department of Administration and a couple other departments where we normally wouldn't necessarily include them is because those departments' budgets are primarily coming from charges that they charge to other agencies. So in Department of Administration, a lot of the activity that they perform is on behalf of other departments. They're maintaining the state's accounting system. They're maintaining state's IT systems. They're now bringing in state procurement and state human resources. So their budget really, you know, it doesn't live in those other fund sources as much. It really lives in what we call duplicated funds or charges to other agencies. And this is important because those charges are paid for with those other funds. So when you see other funds within the Department of Administration, about 40 to 50% of that is paid with unrestricted general fund. So that's important when you're considering that department's budget and the actions taken here. So this first bullet, Office of Information Technology, they are switching the licensing that we use for Microsoft, for the licensing that all state computers are using. That's saving $1.25 million in other funds. So when you see that, you know that they're saving roughly half of that in unrestricted general funds. So in a normal budget graph, that savings may not really register, but it's important to note it here when you're looking at changes in the Department of Administration and the actions they're taking that they, they may in a normal budget graph not really register as a state dollar save, but it is. Other actions that they're taking here, they're transferring the public building facility management over to the Department of Transportation for better management of all facilities. And they're also consolidating procurement activity under the Office of Procurement and Property Management. They're closing six DMV offices. And so these offices are areas with lower traffic that they've determined can be closed. They're encouraging people to go to online services, but they recognize some of those services have to be done in person. So they're working on being able to provide those in-person services still in these communities through other means, but still seeing some operational reductions through closures of offices. And that's about just shy of $600,000 in designated general funds. But those designated general funds, if not spent, flow into the unrestricted general fund at the close of that fiscal year. Another item that you'll note as you look at Department of Administration, you look at that pretty precipitous decline in that graph. One thing that we did this year was look at those agencies that have chargebacks to other state agencies. We looked at the amount that they're budgeted and then the amount that they've actually been charging back. And because a lot of times there's not much focus on duplicated funds in the budget, those numbers have diverged quite a bit. So there's about $17 million in reduction there that isn't truly reduction, so to speak. It's just truing up those budgets so that when you look at a Department of Administration budget, you get a picture for what they're actually going to be charging, what they're actually going to be spending. So it gives you, we believe it gives you a bit truer of a picture of the activity in Department of Administration by adjusting those numbers. But it does look this year like a pretty significant reduction. It is not. It's truly a technical cleanup.
So this basically hollow authority issue you're referring to, why wasn't it done last year or the year before? Can you help us with that? I mean, we've been trying to clarify or get as much transparency in the budget and get as many reductions as we can that can be delivered and not added back in supplementals. Could you help me with that?
Chair Stebbin, that's sort of a multifaceted reason, I guess. So part of it is, as I mentioned earlier, we consider these duplicated funds in the state budget. So they're often not really looked at as closely because they're duplicate of other spending elsewhere. And because they have to be collected to be spent, often that hollow authority will, it's easy to say, oh, it doesn't do any harm. They're not going to spend it because they can't collect it. But at the end of the day, it is really a sort of truth in budgeting issue of trying to rein that in. And so one thing we've been working on at the Office of Management and Budget over the last year is really looking at how do we within the administration or within the executive branch, how do we handle those charges between agencies, and how do we ensure that those bills are accurate and fair and really are reining in spending on some of those things that often in the past haven't had the same, you know, highlight in a budget graph because they were, you know, a fund that often gets filtered out. So I would say in the past maybe that hasn't been, you know, within our office looked at as closely because it was something that, you know, like I said, they have to collect it to spend it. So it's not cutting $16.9 million here doesn't reduce spending by $16.9 million. So, you know, the effort maybe, you know, wasn't considered as much, you know, as necessary to control the spending. But now that we're putting a lot more focus on how money's spent in that agency and in those chargebacks, you know, making the budget match that activity is important so that when you see a change like the $1.25 million for Office of Information Technology, you know that change is from a true budget number, not a budget number inflated by hollow authority.
Funny numbers. I appreciate that. Any other questions? This will be our last slide today, and then we're going to pick it up on Monday. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Director, on your second bullet point, what are the six lucky DMV offices that are targeted by this administration for closure?
Yes, so the six offices that are proposed to be closed are Eagle River, Toke, Delta Junction, Homer, Haines, and Kodiak.
Senator Bishop.
Well, I'm glad they spread it around this time. I didn't get hit as bad.
I could have a question, but do we have any other questions for the director? I want to thank him for his time today. It's always riveting as we go through the budget. There's differences of opinions clearly on certain things here, but we have a good working relationship with OMB. We'll continue to work with OMB and Ledge Finance as we gel all these numbers so the administration and the legislature agrees on the base numbers, and then we'll have a much better chance of getting to solutions to our joint problem as the structural deficit. So if Mr. Director, if you could help us by having some of those charts restated and tables redone a little bit for Monday, it would be helpful, if at all possible. It'd be appreciated, and we'll continue on Monday morning. We'll walk through the rest of these slides, and then we'll pick up with legislative finance, and then we'll go through through that. We should be back on track Monday afternoon, I would think. And we'll continue down the process. I'd like to thank everybody for coming today. We will see everybody's smiley face Monday morning, 9 o'clock. We'll continue on. And don't worry, the deficit will not go away. We'll still have work to do. We are adjourned.